Good evening. My name is Mofei Shia Ayodele, and I'm a student project manager at the Clark Forum for Contemporary Issues. On behalf of the Clark Forum, the first-year seminars, and the learning communities, it is my pleasure to welcome you to this evening's program, Life in Debt. Neoliberal theory has led to the creation of a free market in most parts of the world, arguably for the benefit of countries that dominate the global economy. In developing countries like Jamaica, however, neoliberal economic policies are adversely affecting the lives of many. Structural adjustment policies by the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank have served to make life more difficult for Jamaicans every day. These organizations give development assistance and loans to third world countries in exchange for liberalized trade policies and various measures that theoretically encourage production for export. Once implemented, these policies often lead to an economic divide between poor and wealthy nations. Corporations in Jamaica, as physical components of the globalization process, essentially eradicate local agriculture and industry through business practices that utilize cheap imports and sweatshops. These large corporations sell their inexpensive goods in foreign countries like Jamaica, simultaneously depleting their local competition and causing the deterioration of the local economy. Consequently, there is a vast difference between the beautiful places that tourists see and the poverty that lies beneath it. These discrepancies and injustices are the topic of Stephanie Black's film, Life in Debt, which we will be viewing and discussing tonight. Stephanie Black is a distinguished filmmaker, and her documentary, H2 Worker, was awarded Best Documentary and Best Cinematography at the prestigious Sundance Film Festival in 1990. In addition to creating documentary segments for a well-known childhood favorite, Sesame Street, she has also directed the making of Chanting Down Babylon, a tribute album to Bob Marley. She has produced and directed videos for musical artists such as Ziggy Marley and Anthony B. She has also taught documentary filmmaking at the School of Visual Arts in New York City. At this time, I would like to ask that you disable all cell phones and electronic devices. Please hold all questions until the question and answer session at the end of the program. Because this event is being taped and some audience members may be hearing impaired, please wait until the microphone has been brought to you before beginning to speak. And now we will be watching the film Life in Debt, followed by a question and answer session with the award-winning filmmaker Stephanie Black.
Oh, well, thank you very much for coming out to see the film, and thanks very much to all the kind people at Dickinson who invited me to come this evening. I apologize, I have a little bit of a sore throat, so just bear with me, I'm sorry. So I just maybe have the discussion in the form of a Q&A, so if it's okay, we could just have questions, and the people in that room, you could just, I don't know how, we could just do questions somehow with everyone somehow. Are there any questions? Yep, that's you.
Hi, I'm Rashida. What's the best way to help rectify the situation as college students? What could we be doing to help?
Okay, right to the heart of the matter. Okay. I think, I don't know, you know, I don't have all the answers by any stretch of the imagination, but I think buying and supporting local wherever we are in the world is a very positive step. And I think we're living in a time period where our buying power is perhaps our greatest voice, maybe even stronger than our voting power, as exhibited in the last two elections. But so I would say that consuming local is kind of maybe one of the strongest means that we have to put the brakes on globalization, you know, and if it costs a little bit extra to support local farmers, to support local produce, then I think that is a very important step. There's also various campaigns going on by so many organizations that, you know, are effective, like the campaign for Fair Trade Coffee that, you know, various global exchange and various organizations, you know, follow through on. And, you know, now Starbucks, for example, theoretically, I don't know if it's true or not, you know, only purchases Fair Trade Coffee and such. We have a website, which is www.lifeanddebt.org. In which, if you go to links on it, we try to link link on it all the organizations that are working on these issues, and they're working in different capacities. So, you know, letter writing campaigns, purchasing campaigns, protests, et cetera, et cetera. There's different things that there that I would advocate. So.
Is there anything you would change about the documentary that we just saw? Like, I guess it's been 17 years since it was produced, or like, how long has it been since?
No, it was finished in 2001, so six years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. So, are you still satisfied with the way that it is now?
Yeah, you know, I just watched this for the first time in a little bit of time, so because I've made another film since then, so my head is a little far, and I actually was kind of impressed by it, maybe I was impressed by how dense it was. I was like having trouble keeping up with it almost, let me think if there's something I would change in it. I can't really say that. The other film that I just finished and I saw last week, yeah, there's about 100 things I want to change in that. So maybe also what happens in making it when you're closer to the making process, when you're closer to in your mind of making all those decisions, they're still open, but now it's kind of like a closed book and you've gone on in a way. It seemed okay, and I'm here with you 6 years later, so maybe it's okay, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. Hi. Do you think that tourism in Jamaica helps or hurts the economy more?
I'm sorry, say it again to us.
Does tourism hurt the economy or help the economy in Jamaica?
Tourism definitely helps the economy. And after the film came out, there were many articles that said, like, don't visit Jamaica, I hope that's not at all the message that comes across from the film in any way. The tourists in the film are a metaphor for me. They're not literal. They're just a metaphor for a kind of lack of knowledge and a lack of understanding, which is my own lack of. You know, I'm one of those tourists. You know, it was my own lack of knowledge and lack of understanding that actually led me to make this film. I'm going to come to your question in a very long way, if I might. But I thought that the IMF and the World Bank was something akin to the Red Cross. And despite, you know, my years of undergraduate and graduate school, somehow I had never been taught in any of my classes, you know, what the IMF and the World Bank does. And then And I thought they just kind of like, you know, I never understood that they had this far-reaching arm in the day-to-day runnings of a country. And when I was living and spending time in Jamaica and reading the paper every day and seeing that Jamaica would not be granted, you know, X, Y, and Z if they didn't devalue quick enough, or they would not be granted X, Y, and Z if they didn't allow their sovereign waters to be used by the U.S. Coast Guard as if they were their own waters, et cetera, and that all these things were tied to loan agreements, that's what catalyzed the film. And so the use of the tourists were for me very much this lack of knowledge, this lack of information, of the understanding sometimes of what we as Americans don't have as an understanding of what's going on beyond our borders that we're potentially culpable in. And that question was a key one to me, because we live in the country, I learned later, you know, that has the strongest voting power in the IMF, yet we have no real understanding of what's happening, and are we culpable in any way? And so yes, to answer your question, tourism is important to Jamaica's economy. More important if you go the non-inclusive hotel rate, but go, let's say, visiting the South Coast, where there's really nice, small, locally owned resorts like Jake's which my friends own, so I'll give you a plug for them. But that's beautiful. That's a great place on the south coast in St. Elizabeth, Treasure Beach area. And there's a lot. There's a lot in Portland. There's a lot, you know, beautiful places. So yes, and then you can feel the money. You could even see it in the area trickling down. You know, you could see that. But a lot of the other larger all-inclusives, you know, as what's said in the film, you know, the food and everything is purchased abroad, and they kind of reinvent themselves to meet the expectation of the visitor, whereas the local hotels, you know, are smaller and the experience is more uniquely Jamaican. And tourism, along with the bauxite industry, are the two highest foreign wage earners for Jamaica. The only problem is when a country is so dependent on tourism for its foreign exchange, you know, like, for example, after September 11th, you know, the hotels were shutting down. There was no tourism. And they have an expression in Jamaica, when America sneezes, Jamaica catches the flu, you know. And so it's not really good for any country to have, you know, for tourism to be their number wage, because it's just not dependable enough.
I just had a question about the food issue that was raised as far as local food and imported food. The local food, it was said, is more expensive, and so that's why the imported food is being bought more. But at the same time, if it's cheaper for the Jamaicans to buy the imported food, which is more beneficial, would you say, buying the local food that keeps the money in the community or buying the imported food that is cheaper for them and they can buy more of?
Yeah, I think you're addressing like one of the key arguments, like the pro con, you know, because there is an argument like no subsidized milk is critically important to people in the ghetto who can't afford it, and you know they need this powdered milk, which is really unhealthy for you. In any case, no, but I have, you know, my specific perspective on this. So, but in a, you know, that is the key argument there, you know, and is making, you know, chicken backs, you know, available at this very cheap rate, you know, for people who might not be able to afford it otherwise. Is that, you know, a pro? I would say, you know, maybe yes, but only in a very, very short term. So I think in the long term, Jamaica's dairy industry, for example, was really developing very quickly, you know, and it was growing, you know, every year from the 80s through the 90s, and then like in 92, when certain liberalization policies were imposed on the country, the dairy industry just sank, and it doesn't exist at all anymore. And the research farms, like Bodle's research farms, where they were doing experimentation with different cows, which was the best, you know, breeding cow, etc., all that is shut down, and it will never be resumed again. So now we have a situation where Jamaica will never be, you know, self-reliant in milk production. And so, and you know, as mentioned in the film, the powdered milk that's coming in is highly subsidized. It's really the equivalent of dumping, and antitrust laws should be able to be, you know, enacted. But we subsidize powdered milk. It's one of the food items under, like, the war subsidies thing, and it's considered a critical item. But if we're not in a war period and we don't have a shortage of milk, we just have an excess of subsidized powdered milk. And again, it's excuse me, dangerous for a country to be dependent on a product that's, you know, artificially, you know, subsidized by another country's, you know, political situation. So my personal opinion is that I think, you know, it's a kind of simplistic no pain, no gain, you know, but I think that, you know, over the long haul, I think Jamaica, if, you know, they need, you know, our industries in the U.S. were developed through trade barriers, you know, and a lot of protectionism, and Jamaica is, you know, unfortunately in these deals, they're demanded to reduce their trade barriers, and the smaller countries for some reason seem to do it very quickly and very efficiently, and the U.S. doesn't do it very quickly or very efficiently, and I don't know why we're not penalized, but we're not, and we don't do it despite, you know, certain WTO rules and agreements at present day. But, like, for example, in the farming area, The fruits and the vegetables, they really, really taste better. Like, I'm like, a carrot tastes like a carrot. It's almost like you haven't eaten a carrot until, like, you've had a carrot, you know. And so we're also living in a world where somehow this, like, this big carrot that has no blemishes or is better shaped or something is considered, like, better than, and has no taste, than this carrot that is, like, wiggly and you know, and such. And so that you know, taste is never isn't a quantifier that we kind of recognize. The other like irrigation and different things need to be developed for Jamaica to be able to be productive on a more competitive level. And without support of local industry, there's no capital to make sure those things happen. So again, I think I think that Jamaica would be much better if they. I mean, you don't really need to eat a U.S. apple in Jamaica. They have these amazing OTT apples that are they're like watermelon type apples, and they're very full of moisture, and they're quite suitable to the climate there. And U.S. apples sell for $1 each more now in Jamaica, one U.S. dollar each. And what's brought down there really is terrible, you know, it's like really third quality kind of such stuff. So, yeah.
Hi, could you describe the methods you used in making this film?
Sure. My method actually is, as I said, I was living in Jamaica, and I came to understand the subject matter in a way that I had never learned before. And it kind of, you can talk to anyone, and they knew everything about the IMF and the World Bank, like the back of their hand. And this was a little bit, when I was doing the research, was pre-Seattle, pre the anti-globalization movement per se. And so basically I would just talk to everyone in the country, and they would explain to me. And I found that quite interesting, because these economic issues were somehow considered like too complex or too lofty, you know, for the layperson. And yet, you know, everyone in Jamaica could explain to me, you know, interest rates and such, and what's being imposed, because, you know, it was their lives that were supposedly benefiting from these policies, but weren't at all. So I spent a lot of time researching, going all around the island, and just researching and speaking to people. And so for every farmer you see there's like 20 other farmers who are not on camera, and just learning the subject matter really from the bottom up. It wasn't books that were guiding me. It was really reading the actual loan agreements themselves. And I try to I research things that aren't in the film, like, for example, coffee in Jamaica, which is owned by foreign interests, by Japanese and such, and undersold, and the money isn't reaching back, and different subjects. But ultimately chose each section of the film is kind of divided up by, you know, a certain loan agreement, what it was supposed to achieve, and then actually what it did achieve, you know. And this is, you know, first with the standard IMF and the vegetables, then with the IDB in the dairy, and then with the WTO and bananas. And so the film kind of was structured that way. And then I had read a small place while I was researching and fundraising at the same time, and I was so very interested in taking this kind of post-colonial text. Her voice spoke to me very, very brilliantly, and I admire her work greatly. And I was interested in her anger at having grown up in a colonial and post-colonial society, and how this transferred so easily to a neo-colonial context, and that we've all kind of agreed that colonialism is wrong, and, you know, all the countries either fought for or given their independence, but yet the policies of the IMF, you know, are somewhat very much akin to the policies of colonialism. And so that was the integration of the Kincaid text, and also this idea of the metaphor of the visitor, you know, and this kind of lack of information, which lack of information being like a kind of victim. There's a victimization with a lack of information and a lack of knowledge and culpability that I was trying to address. And so The film was I researched the film for quite a long time, like maybe about 4 years, and fundraised at the same time, and then I shot it all within a year and a half span, and then edited it for about another year, and then it came out in 2001. I don't know if that is that the process.
Yeah. Okay.
I was just wondering if there is somehow debt cancellation through by the IMF and the World Bank and other organizations, and Jamaica is able to spend money freely without as many restrictions, do you think Jamaica can become a self-sustaining economy or like by itself with the money that's being used, or are there internal problems within the government or education or just how money is spent? Do you think that Jamaica can become like a self-sustaining economy, or are there other problems that money, that even if it is spent freely into Jamaica's wishes, do you think it other problems that could arise, or do you think Jamaica can just rise up if there's debt cancellation, other free restrictions?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Unfortunately, the Jamaica actually doesn't qualify for debt cancellation. It's considered a middle range country, so although there has been some countries which do qualify, that Jamaica is not one of them. But I think that's a challenging question. I think what happened when Jamaica became independent is there were kind of vestiges of colonialism that had to be deconstructed, and the country had been so, you know, for 400 years it had been kind of, you know, instructed to export, you know, its resources and import what it consumes and not build in any way a sovereign, self-reliant nation. And so when it became independent, these vestiges, as opposed to being able to, you know, be you know, removed through protectionism and certain things that would better ensure that, I think the IMF comes in and it almost like preys on reestablishing these vestiges. And so at this particular point, even though it's only, 35 years later I don't know. I don't know, you know, the damage done, I think, would take more than debt cancellation. You know, I think it would take, you know, it would take, right now the banana industry has been destroyed because as a result of the WTO ruling, the European Union came through and said, okay, we're going to help Jamaica and the other ACP countries become more become more competitive in banana production. But what they did, for example, in Jamaica is they gave all these loans, but it left all the small farmers to the wayside, and they said, okay, we're just going to focus on the three largest banana industries. So they actually accelerated with this focus on the destruction of... So all those guys who you see talking who are small banana, they're completely out of business. And there's the three biggest companies, which are are struggling to become, you know, more efficient and competitive. So there's been so many trends like this led to this, led to this, led to this, that to like pull the brakes and to kind of go back, I think would take, true nation building and a different mentality. That's what's been put in place, you know, for these past few decades. Jamaicans are survivors, and the country is very, very rich, you know, in resource and culture and such. So I do think that the country can achieve this. It's just it would take, you know, the government in place to really have that as their full focus. And it's very hard for the government to break their ties in any which way with the United States and not do what the United States wants them to do. You know, anytime they try to do that, they get punished. You know, they have to follow what the U.S. wants in terms of drug enforcement, in terms of everything. You know, they're really... I mean, even recently, the Prime Minister, Portia Simpson, she made a deal with Chavez that they were going to get less expensive oil from Venezuela, and Chavez was also going to lend Jamaica money to continue building this Highway 2000, which isn't complete yet. It was supposed to be finished in 2000. That's the name. But in any case, they really got their hands slapped, you know, for dealing with Chavez in any way. And and, you know, behind the tables, things get pulled. So I think it's complex. Yeah.
I think you could draw a parallel between what's going on in Jamaica and what's happening here in our own country with things like Walmart.
Yeah, definitely. It was very interesting making the film because sometimes when you're making documentaries, you feel like a used car salesman a little bit because you're convincing people like, okay, come in my idea. I have this great idea. Just stand there and say this. Stand there and talk, you know, kind of thing. And with this film, it was very interesting because I had this feeling every time I would go talk to the farmers, it was like almost like I had this metaphor. Before I can reach the gate, they were halfway there. And they were so wanting to tell their story because they themselves identified with the small farmers in the United States. And they identified with the small businesses that were being put out. And they felt that if there was more dialogue, like farmer to farmer, then there was more potential for hope and less government to government dialogue. I definitely agree that, you know, this is the trend of globalization, you know, like, you know, this is it. This is, that's its success. You know, Walmart is the success of globalization.
Do you see any advantages in globalization?
No, I don't know. You know, I don't know. I guess the word is a very broad word, you know, so depending on how much you include in that word, you know. But no, I mean, not that I've seen. I don't know. No, I don't know. Maybe someone else has an answer that.
The cost definitely outweighs.
Yeah, I would say yeah. I mean, because it doesn't make sense. Like they, you know, it's not a level playing field. You know, and to purport that it is a level, you know, like the heavyweight boxer doesn't fight the fly, you know, the lightweight boxer. And so how do they expect a country like Jamaica, you know, to be able to compete? It just doesn't make sense. Like they don't take into effect economies of scale, specific histories, etc. And then if you do have it, people aren't where are all these meat farmers? Let's say the U.S. is, yes, you win. You're the most efficient beef farmer. You know, you're going to produce beef for the world. But then what do? Like fly the immigration gates and invite all the beef farmers from the world to come live here? You know, it doesn't make, I don't understand the ideas, the thinking behind it doesn't make sense. You know, like, what do we do? There are all these people who have done these things for centuries and they're just out of work. And you know, we don't have free, we don't move people the way we allow goods to move. So I just don't understand the principle, the logic behind the ideas. I don't see them, yeah. Mm.
What audience were you trying to reach out to by making this film?
I'm sorry, could you...
What kind of audience were you trying to reach out to by making this film?
I think an American audience. I think that, like myself, an audience like myself. The film was made in a very small way. Like it was, you know, edited in my bedroom and, you know, and it was made by a few, you know, a small... like three people, basically, and so I didn't have the expectation that it would reach as far as it's reached and keep continuing, you know. And I think that speaks to the lack of good information on this subject matter as well that's out there. I think there's a lot of good books, but the news, you know, certainly doesn't cover this issue, I think, as in depth or as appropriately as it should. And so. But I think I was just I think I was making it in reaction to the lack of information that I had. Even when I came back from after living in Jamaica and talking to all these people about the subject matter, I did a Nexus. I don't know if it's still called that Nexus thing where I got every article written on the IMF and the World Bank in the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post and the New York Times and all the whole country's major, and this was in like 92, 93, and the file was this thin. It's just like the IMF and the World Bank, they're not transparent in any way. They weren't being covered in our news. It wasn't information that was considered, and I was very kind of, appalled and angered by that. And so I guess I was trying, and many of my friends, we all have our, college degrees and our graduate degrees, and many of my friends, we didn't even know what IMF stood for. It was just an acronym we had heard, and so that was the audience I was going towards. Subsequently, the film has shown in a lot of traveled the world, has shown in many, all around the globe, and shown in many IMF borrowing nations. It showed in Argentina, and I remember the people there. They said, you could have made this film here, the exact same story you could have made here. And I said, but then it wouldn't have a reggae soundtrack. But separate from that, the film, unfortunately, is too relevant to many countries around the world because the IMF prescribes the same, structure, they call it medicine, the same structural adjustment policies to every country that borrows from it, and so unfortunately, the countries that are considered success stories by the IMF are the ones that don't borrow anymore. Ghana is considered a success story, but all of its gold is on the London stock market, owned outside. So, I tend to ramble, I'm sorry.
Hi, I was hoping you'd get to the music. I was curious about your choice of songs, and I know a lot of your other work has been in working with musicians and films on music. And I noticed a lot of these songs are commenting on the social situation or the economic situation quite directly and critically. And I wondered about your choice in the process of putting the music in.
That's the fun part. The music is the fun part. And I love reggae because, reggae reminds you. It keeps you kind of, it's so easy to get distracted these days, and I love, reggae lyrics are the conscious cultural lyrics that kind of remind you, that's it. There's a scene, the beginning scene with Buju Banton walking on the streets. I was kind of trying to represent a little bit where the fuel stuff for the music comes from, and such. I don't know. No, I just feel very happy that all these musicians and artists allowed me to use the music pretty much. I can just feel very grateful that they said yes, and because they give me the fuel. So that it's like an honor to be able to use their music. And I don't know what to say more.
Sort of technical question. Was the scene with the guy singing and walking that was at the beginning and the end of the movie, was that lit and set up in advance? Was the background lit and everything like that?
Yeah, the first is with Buju Banton walking across, and the closing one is with Yami Bolo. The scene in the background is that's all natural. The scene behind them, it's shot just on a steady cam with a sun gun. And it's like we did like three takes, yeah. So it's, I didn't just happen, I didn't just happen to capture Buju walking in the street singing, but,
The scene with the three guys with the smoke and the fire, that was kind of somewhere also.
Yeah, that was just a request from me. I asked, there are three people who I know, and I asked them, that typical, what goes on for hours on end in Jamaica is reasonings. And so I just asked them if they would have a reasoning about how debt is dealt with in the Bible and just speak about debt in the Bible. And so that was just straight. They started talking, and I just rolled three rolls of film, 30 minutes. And that, so there was no direction on what they said at all. They just spoke amongst, that was it. That was the only direction. Yeah.
Do you feel that the IMF has left Jamaica with a choice of whether or not to sacrifice its economy or its culture due to tourism?
Like, do I feel that the IMF has influenced Jamaica to have to sacrifice its culture towards tourism?
To either destroy its country in order to make way for tourism, in order to create a stable economy. Do you feel the IMF has left Jamaica with that one and only choice?
No, definitely not. No, I wouldn't say no. No, I think, as far as I know, tourism might be one of the few things that, I mean, there probably are loans for, there probably do exist loans that help facilitate building of hotels or something like that, but I'm not familiar with them. But moreover, if, let's say, you want to borrow money to build a school, like building a free zone will be attached to the loan that you borrow, like from the World Bank. Like, they want to borrow money for education, and they'll lend them the money for education, but then they'll also attach to that same loan, you know, building certain free zones, etc. So I'm not familiar with the IMF or the World Bank's role in tourism in Jamaica. I mean, Jamaica's been a place that, you know, people have been, you know, going to and visiting, you know, for the centuries, you know, like, I mean, like the past century, like, you know, it's you know, always been a kind of resort of, you know, wealthy, you know, Ian Fleming vacationed there and wrote all his James Bond films. Noel Coward had a house there. There's all, you know, pre-IMF, there's, you know, it's a vacation place for the, you know, you know, people who could afford to leave the UK, mostly British because it was a colony. As far as, I don't know if someone knows better than I do, but as far as, no, I wouldn't posit it that way. Tourism is a wage earner, is a foreign exchange earner for Jamaica, and countries need foreign exchange, and so that's its, one of its best products that it's exporting is its touristic, you know, its role as a tourist destination. That's what it has to sell, you know, to get foreign exchange. And I recommend you all go there personally. I've been all around the world, and there's no place in the world like Jamaica. Sincerely, amazing island.
In your conversations with the Jamaicans, did you get the feeling that there was resentment against the United States specifically, or against the rich countries in general? Because the argument can be made that Europe is just as the European Union is just as responsible for their plight as the United States. So, did you find any kind of anti-Americanism, or it was just criticism against those, the IMF, the WTO, and so on?
I found a very distinct understanding that the government and the people are separate, and that, you know, because Jamaicans understand that because they live in a country where they feel quite separate from their government, and so there was a definite understanding of Jamaica. No, I didn't feel that anti-U.S. No, I felt definite anti-government.
I'm wondering, have you heard any comments from the IMF and the World Bank or anybody associated with them or the WTO defending their policies in Jamaica and other places like it? Have they responded to your film in any way? And if so, what have they said to defend what they've done?
With reaction to the film, I couldn't hear what they were saying because they were talking so loud. I had to hold the phone very, very far. So, and that was one phone call. With respect to what they think they're doing in Jamaica, I went to a press conference after. Jamaica doesn't borrow money from the IMF anymore, but they were on a policy that the IMF didn't cancel for a while, and now is reinstating this kind of monitoring program where you don't borrow from the IMF, but they come and they check you up and they advise you, and if you follow what they say, you get like these kind of perks and such. But they stopped that program, but now they're initiating it again. But when I went to this press conference where they were speaking and talking about how they've helped Jamaica. The main thing they cited was the life expectancy on the island, how it had increased since that. And I was impressed that they somehow owned that, that they somehow felt that that was a sign of, that was the only thing I heard them say as, you know, a significant, yeah. I have that footage. I never was able to integrate it into the film, but it was quite telling to me in a certain way that, you know, when someone asked at the preference conference, what is, you know, what are the signs that the IMF has, you know, succeeded in Jamaica, and they quoted the life expectancy on the island has increased.
The guy that was from the IMF, when you interviewed him, what did you tell him the interview was for? Was it difficult to get to be able to speak with him?
My day job is I work for Sesame Street, and they asked for a sample of your work. So I sent them some Sesame Street work. The one who called me was the one who I had sent the work to. But he's Stanley Fisher. He's now the head of Citibank International. He left the IMF. Actually, he's one of the better guys at the IMF, believe it or not. He left because he was frustrated there with some of their policies. But getting an interview with the IMF is kind of like getting an interview with the president. It falls in that same, like, league, and independent filmmakers are not supposed to get the interviews with these people. And I was lucky. I got through the gates, and I just explained that I was trying to make a film for young people to understand, you know, what the IMF is and such. And you have to submit your questions in advance, and when you interview them, like you interview them, and there's they tell you that there's people behind, like they're watching from behind, like a glass, you know, like a one-way thing, and I don't know, they're listening and checking, I don't know what, and then at the end, you know, if you ask a question that wasn't on the interview list, they ask you to leave. It made me feel sad in the end, because it made me feel sad that, you know, the interview with Stanley Fisher was the last interview I shot for the film, so everything else had been shot already, and you know, and I thought it's just sad that we don't live in a world where you can actually ask the, you know, I said to him, you know, my last question, I asked one that wasn't on the list, and they shut me down. I said, I interviewed Michael Manley, and he said that this signing with the IMF was the worst decision he had made in his political career. What is your comment on that? And then it was like interview over, you know, and such. And I'm lucky that they didn't, you know, take any film or anything like that and such. And when you're interviewing people, you should always ask for them to sign the release before you do the interview for potential documentary filmmakers out there. But, you know, it was just depressing that we don't live in a world where you could, or we think that we do live in a world, but we actually don't, or we live in a country where you can actually, you know, kind of ask the questions in an interview that you'd like to, but you can't, you know, they approve. But it worked anyway, the very general questions, like, you know, why do you impose devaluation? Why do you, you know, they were all basic, like, IMF for beginners type questions, and so it worked. It's a thing.
On behalf of the first year Sermonize and Learning Communities and the Collect Forum, we would like to present you with this gift. It's a miniature version of the poster that was used to advertise this program. So this is for you. Thank you very much for coming and for making this film. That concludes our program for tonight, so thank you all for coming, and have a lovely evening. Happy weekend. All done.
Thank you very much. Thank you. That's very sweet. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.